So this note of preface was actually recorded after you're about to listen to. Shortly after the shir, I remembered a Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Samach Dalet, which I'm going to include in part two of this shir. The Gemara in Bava Basra, Daf Samach Dalet, describes the difference between a bor and a dut, two different kinds of cisterns. And a bor, which is the one that our Mishnah and our Gemara refer to, is an in-ground cistern in which the walls are really just earth that's in place. In other words, you dig a hole in a place of solid earth, whereas a dut or a dus is a cistern which you dig into the ground and you actually put in stone walls lining the pit of the cistern. And the reason I'm emphasizing this is because in the shir you're about to hear, I described research that had been done into cisterns from Roman times and how they found cisterns with stone walls. And during the shir, I failed to distinguish between that and the bor that's actually being discussed. So I was describing bor as a pit with stone walls. That's incorrect. A bor is a pit that's just dug into strong earth. The rest of the shir, I think, I hope, is correct, and I don't think it affects the substance of the shir. Kol Rav Zman, and this shir hopefully will actually fit within the hour, but there are no guarantees. Some of it is very complicated, so it may bleed over into next week. It may need some, you know, element recorded and then a link sent out. We'll see how things go. But what I want to do, as I said in the email originally, is first to deal with two minor notes on holdover issues that we talked about in Elul. Then primarily multiple ways to read the Gemara on the top of Yedzayin Amud Beis, commenting on the Mishnah's opening line about distancing your bor from the other person's kotel. And that discussion has practical applications in cases where you have somebody who digs a bor, digs a cistern right up along the property line with somebody else, and the guy on the other side wants to put in a bor on the other side. So we'll move into that and discuss the halacha in that sugya and the machlokes Abayi and Rava about making the first move and putting your bor next to the property line. All of those things will be part of our conversation, I hope. Okay. So first holdover issue. We wondered about what happens when the distancing requirements that are set out in the Gemara, 25 amos for this and 3 tefach for that, don't match what is considered required today in terms of a municipality or in terms of the research that's been done, right? It's one thing where the view of our Gemara is more makil than what society is. Our Gemara is more makil. Our Gemara says 25 amos, and the municipality says you need 40 amos. So there, it's relatively straightforward. We have a concept of Dina de Malchusa, which many poskim believe, most poskim, I think, believe, applies to measures that the government takes on behalf of public welfare. So the answer is going to be, if the government says 40, you do 40. I don't care if the Mishnah says 25. But what about the other way around? What about where the Gemara is actually more machmir? Am I stuck with 25 amos if the government says, that's not a danger at all? You don't need any distance, or you need 5 amos, or whatever it is. Now what do you do? So during shir, someone, I think it was Idan, suggested that this could be like other halachic issues in which Chazal say something that depends on their understanding of physical reality in their day. However, our understanding now, for whatever reason, is different, whether because the world has changed or whether because scientific knowledge is different, whatever it is, like the case of killing lice on Shabbos, where classically there were sources that seemed to indicate that lice are spontaneously generated and therefore they do not truly have life. Today we don't accept, by and large, there are still those who do, but by and large we don't accept since the days of Louis Pasteur the idea of spontaneous generation. Or eating maggots which grow from their medium. Not that there was an egg in the banana or in the meat or whatever it is, but rather the idea that it actually grew from the banana, it grew from the meat. So could you apply the principles of that that we apply there to our discussion as well? So the truth of the matter is that in those areas, like the issue of the louse on Shabbos, Posts can differ about what one should do. And I just brought you on the sheet three sources that we're not going to go into in any depth. This is just, you know, because it's a curious issue. But three sources that I used in a class that I gave at Beth Emeth several years ago on this topic. And in source number four, I gave you a link where you can catch the recording. The whole shiur was about spontaneous generation, but bigger, you know, in terms of how we deal with conflicts or apparent conflicts between halachic conclusions and what scientific research demonstrates. So you had the first view that I brought there from the Pachad Yitzchak Limpranti. The Pachad Yitzchak Limpranti is a very worthwhile read. I find no one's familiar with him. They all think the Pachad Yitzchak was invented by Reb Huttner. The Pachad Yitzchak Limpranti is basically an encyclopedia of concepts in Shas and in Halacha, and a very worthwhile read. If you like the Stechemed, you'll really like the Pachad Yitzchak. So the Pachad Yitzchak says, you accept the science of the Chumrah. And Rav Yashiv is quoted in Orcha Shabbos as saying so as well. So what that means is, if the science tells you that lice are alive, and that they were born out of normal reproduction, then that means you're not allowed to kill them on Shabbos. Even though, based on the classic idea that it's spontaneously generated, you should be allowed to kill it on Shabbos. So we follow the science, l'chumrah. That's one view. Second view here, Rav Yehuda Brial, says you reject the science. Halacha is always right, regardless of the science. I brought it here in source number two. He talks about it in terms of Ayin Hara, where, Idan, you don't have to listen, there are those who have argued scientifically that there's no such thing, and yet we continue to follow it. We're not interested. There's a great Rashba, which is a must-read on this topic. The Rashba talks about trefos and how the idea is that a trefos shouldn't be able to live for a year. And someone comes to him and says, but my animal had that, and yet it's still alive long afterwards. And he says, you're wrong. You're wrong. It's a different animal. You didn't see what you thought you saw happen to your animal, whatever it is, but it's physically impossible. It cannot happen. The Rashba is adamant. And then you have a third view, I brought here in the name of the Michta Meliyahu of Dassler in source number three, in which he says also to reject the scientific view, not because it's necessarily wrong, but because the halacha isn't really about scientific explanation. You can't read in and apply the scientific explanation as the full element of the halacha. So for example, to take the trefos example, it's not only about whether the animal is going to survive or not. Even if the animal can survive, it's still a trefa. Why? Nistar, sod, whatever it is. But there's some other reason besides what you think of for that halacha. And again, you could hear more about this in source number four. So the question is, can you apply those views to our discussion? And say the Pachad Yitzchak will say, well, if science says you need to be marchik 40 amos, then you have to be marchik 40 amos, not the 25 that the Mishnah says. Or could you say, no, we reject them. They think you need 40 amos, but our Mishnah says you only need 25 amos. Azai, you only need 25 amos. Leave aside Yina de Malchusa. And so on. Could you really do that? So I would argue that you can't. I would argue that our case is different, because with due respect to the concept of the Michta Meliyahu, that halacha has multiple reasons, our sources make it really, really clear that what we're talking about is distancing in order to avoid harm. G'day lahazik, that's what it is. And I brought you the obvious. So if you take a look at source Aleph and source Beis, we were very clear. We said you distance the ladder from the dove cut for amos. Why? K'day shalo tikpot hanamiya. So that this creature is not able to jump from the ladder. It's not, you know, it's not for some other reason. It's not because of some idea, you know, feng shui, whatever, ladders shouldn't be located in such location. No. It's very clear. Ditto in Mishnah Beis, when we talk about distancing the granary from the other fellow's, saplings. So he says, Kadesha lo yazik, so that it isn't going to cause harm. We're really very explicit, and we saw it in the Rush. The Rush was, I brought it in the initial shiur of Elul's Man. It's in source Gimel. And the Rush said over there, that all of our shiurim are fundamentally about preventing harm. That's what it's all about. Kol davar v'davar lefi masha ra'ui, each item that we talk about distancing based on the needs that it has. And therefore, if you take a look at source number four, Rav Yaakov Yeshaya Bloy in the Pisrei Choshen, he says, I have news for you. Pisrei Choshen, for those who are not familiar with it, it's very important to be familiar with it. It's a 10-volume review of anything and everything you want to know in the realm of Choshen Mishpat. Rav Bloy was a major dayan in Eretz Yisrael. He was Nifter a few years ago. But it's beautiful, and he brings you footnotes, and often the references in the footnotes are incorrect, and you have to then hunt down what he really was referring to. There are all sorts of typos, but the material is always right. They are often right. But no, it's really it's a remarkable and tremendous read, and very recommended. So he says to you, I have news for you. When it comes to these shiurim and how far you have to distance yourself, I'm not bringing all the different shiurim from our Gemara. Not interested. If you look at Dalet, he says the Gemara b'Shulchan Aruch huskiv shiurim latanur l'kiraim shal yachav shal nachtom. The Gemara the Shulchan Aruch brings shiurim for how far you have to distance from different kinds of ovens. Private oven, a commercial baker's oven. Upashut shlo nemra shiurim el lefiat tanurim babatim shayubi mehem. That was based on their architecture. It was based on their ovens. Ubizmanenu, in our day, mistaber she'ain shiurim ela noagim. These shiurim are not relevant. V'lachein loy veisi shiurim elu ela, and therefore I haven't quoted them. V'chein b'chol archakos shenamru b'hem shiurim shenira shenamru lefiat musagim shemimei chazal aposkim lo etakti. And he says the same thing is true for all shiurim of distancing that relate to what they had back in their day. And he quotes you the Rush that I quoted here as well. And jumping to the end after the parentheses, Ela sheyesh lilmod mizesh lo yasa adam besoch beso davar ha'alul lahazik v'lisrof habayit. He says, what you gain from the Gemara, we're not getting rid of the Gemara. The Gemara is telling you, you have to distance yourself to make sure you don't burn down the house. So that's important information. You just, you know, what that distancing looks like is going to vary. That's what he says. And therefore, if the popular practice is more machmir due to concern for harm, if the Mishnah says 25 amos, and in fact the municipal regulations say no, it's 40 amos, then the answer is you have to do 40 amos. The Beis Yitzchak has this great case, worth reading, Rabbi Yitzchak Shmelkish, in Source Hay. He deals with a case in which there was a fellow who was stockpiling naphth. I always get confused if naphtha is kerosene or whether naphtha is something different from it, but the bottom line is it's a very flammable liquid. This fellow is stockpiling it. And his neighbor is very uncomfortable because the government requires that if you stockpile these flammable liquids, then you need to make sure that you have iron doors that will prevent it, you know, if it catches fire from spreading and causing any harm. And this guy has no such protections. So the neighbor says, I'm not having any of that. And he goes to the municipality and he says, you know, this guy's stockpiling the stuff in his house. And as a result, the guy who's stockpiling the kerosene has to now put in these doors and he has to spend a lot of money. He takes him to Beis Din and he says, you're a moser. You turn me over to the government. And the Beis Yitzchak says, who are you kidding? Take a look at Source Hay. The opening line, it just has the introduction to the case. But look at Tshuva, the third line in Source Hay. He says, that's a big responsibility, selling kerosene in large quantities. He says, that leads to fire. We've seen that. He says, who are you kidding? The Torah would say you have to distance yourself. The Torah would say that you have to take measures to protect. He says, we don't view it as the neighbor by reporting you caused you harm by making you have to spend on this. That's a Torah law that you have to do that. He says, absolutely not. Then he goes along, and he also says, actually worth noting in the context of our masking discussion, Hagam ki ein bazeh rak hatzala purta, even if it only saves you a little bit, even if it only saves people a little bit, it's not like this is an almighty protection. Because the truth of the matter is, they keep these iron doors open when the business is running. They keep the iron doors open. They're not really protecting everybody. If there's something that you can do that will help protect people, you have a chiyuv to do it. So where our regulations are more makil than the municipal regulations, you have to follow the municipal regulations. That's on one side. And the other side, like we saw in the Pesach Choshen already, if logic says that you can be more makil, if our current information says you can be more makil than the standard in the Mishnah, we follow that as well. And I bring you the Aruch HaShulchan in Source Vav. He's supposed to be building off of Maharsham. But take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan, which I thought was a very lucid presentation. He says, Venira, Dikshayeshba Tanur Aruba Mala Ashan Rechava Ubria. He says, if your oven has a chimney that is very broad and that is very strong. V'yotzei ad l'mala me'agag, and it extends up over the roof, k'mo b'yameinu eila, like in our advanced days in Novardok of 130 years ago. He says, v'adai de'ein tzarech harchaka begova. He says, you don't have to be distance in terms of your height, meaning we talk about in the Mishnayos, how if I have an oven, then there has to be a certain height over it before you get to the floor above, right, out of concern for catching fire. So he says, if you have a chimney and the chimney is venting out of the house, I have no considerations here. Everything is going outside. And if you don't have a proper chimney, like in villages, and if you have a big oven, you need more than 4 amos distance. If it's a small one, it's enough to have 4 amos, but you have to evaluate based on what we know. So that was just a follow-up on that question about what happens when our standards are different from the municipal standards. Idan. Yeah. Right. Right. So that's a really interesting question. As a general principle, and this is just broadly, this is not really giving a practical answer, but just as a general principle, we assume that minhag has power either when it has a religious basis for it, or when it's mitam neder. That people have taken on hanhaga tova outside of the realm of something that's for a religious purpose. So could you argue that protection of health is that, and therefore that becomes a neder? It seems like it's something that's very tied to practicality. Like, I mean, certainly Tosfos will say no, right? The classic Tosfos on Giloy, where he says, we don't have those snakes here. Avoids the problem, because if he's willing to say, when the snakes aren't here, Giloy isn't an issue, then the same... So, again, it's not that minhag won't be strong, it's that that isn't really called minhag. That's the way that they would answer it, I think. But it's a good question, worthy of more discussion, for sure. I can't hear you well, I'm sorry. Yeah. Right, so if the municipal standard is higher, then we have 2 reasons to hold to it. Right, the question that was asked was, I did say before that when the municipal standard is higher, you have to follow it. So I mentioned before Dina de Malchusa as one consideration, but because we do say that, again, most posts can believe that the Dina de Malchusa does include legislation the government makes for the protection of the community. There's actually a nice Rashba on that as well. Gimel Shin Sadi Gimel, I think. But the other reason is because they may be right, that there actually is more of a sakana, and our Mishnah itself will be modeh. Right? The point that the Pesach Hoshin is making, the point the Aruch HaShulchan is making, is that the Mishnah itself would agree that if it's dangerous beyond 25 amos, you have a chiyuv to be marchik more. So if they're telling you it's dangerous, then yeah. The problem comes up, as we've seen, in the pandemic. Well, what if the government says it, but it's not because of danger? But if they have other reasons for saying what they say, that makes things thornier. Yes, AZ. AZ.
Are we always supposed to take the chumra side of being extra careful? Is this by nezek in general, or is this by nezek where there's sakana involved to it? The example at least that you saw in the work with that you said, the Rosh Hashanah as well had smoke is daka tanur, or there's net, and there's something that's really dangerous of catching the sakana process.
Right.
That makes sense in that situation where you want maybe to say, yeah, we're more mad, or you're just even though we have a little bit, but maybe my general nezek will say, okay, so you lost a few flowers.
Right. So the Chasam Sofer, in a tshuva that we saw week one, says that because when you're dealing with harming other people's property, there's an element of gezel, which is a deoraisa, we view it as suffik deoraisa, and therefore lechumra. Happens to be the cases we're dealing with here, specifically are sakana cases, but I believe it would apply anytime you're talking about harming someone else's property. That would be my understanding. The limit on that, because there has to be a limit on that, like how far do you go, will be what we saw from the Rush and the Nisivos, and that is where your distance is going to prevent you from using your property, Bichlal, then the Yesh Gvul. You know, there are certain risks that people take upon themselves when they live in proximity to other people, and they just know that's going to happen. So we don't say you have to now, you know, tiptoe around your apartment or buy carpet for your apartment so the guy below you can sleep. There are certain things that are just basic understanding. It's one thing if you're making noise at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. It's another thing if you're doing it at 3 a.m. That varies. Okay. The other question that was a holdover one from Elulzman was, what happens if my neighbor's conduct renders my space unusable? If you want to close that, you could. What happens if my neighbor's conduct renders my space unusable or unlivable for halachic reasons? Meaning, we talk about cases in which it becomes unusable for other reasons. He digs a pit, and therefore I can't dig a pit or something like that. But what if it's halachic? It's halachic, my reason for not being able to use the space. So my neighbor wants to sunbathe in a condition in which I'm not going to be able to now go out because I'm going to have to see them in their yard. So are they obligated not to behave in that way in order to help me out? So I saw a piece in the Shaar Mishpat referenced in the Piskei Choshen. To plug that again, I don't get commission for sales of the Sefer. It's just it's an amazing, amazing set of Sfarim. So the Emek Mishpat, the Shaar Mishpat, I should say, says the following regarding a divorce and relocation issue. I brought you the Gemara in Source Zayin, it's Ksuvas Chav Chesam at Aleph, which talks about a case in which a man and a woman get divorced, and then afterwards they want to live in the same shchuna. They want to live right near each other, and we don't want them living right near each other. We think that that's going to create all sorts of challenges. So mi nidchami mipnei mi. So who has to move? So they bring you a brisa which says she has to move, because as they explain in the Gemara, and I brought you the rest of the Gemara there based on a pasuk in Yeshayah Chav Beis, it's harder for a man to relocate than for a woman to relocate. Whether that is an eternal psychological observation or not is a fun discussion for another time. But that's the statement, is that for a man to pick up and move will be harder than for a woman to pick up and move, and therefore we expect her to move. And in fact, that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, Evan Ezer Kuf Yutes Yud Aleph. However, the Chakas Mechokek on that halacha in Shulchan Aruch says not so fast. He says it depends. In the event that she owns a house in that area and he is just renting, then he has to move. If they have unequal claims to living there, then whoever has the stronger claim gets to stay. The only issue is, what if their claims are equal? They both own. They're both renting. That's when this comes up. So the question arises, what about where he is living in a yard and she wants to marry somebody who is going to move into that yard? Is she able to marry somebody knowing that they're going to move into that area and now cause him, the other guy, a problem? So the Chakas Mechokek says, I'm sorry, the Chakas Mechokek was the one who said that that she has to move if the claims are equal. But the Shaar Mishpat in Source Ches says something very interesting. He says, based on what I wrote, that the reason why she has to move is because it's harder for him to move. Even though that's really a weak reason to give for why she should have to move. He says, look, one of them has to move. So if I'm going to evaluate and decide which one is moving, even if the difference between them is very small, the one for whom it's harder to move should be able to stay. Even if the difference between them is really not so significant. So he says, in kein benidon zem, on the second line in Ches, so in our case, she wrote to lehinase lecha b'bnei ambavoy, she wants to marry somebody who lives in that area. Yesh lomar da ba'al arisho nidcha mipanel. So you could argue that now her husband is the one who has to move. Why? Do you lo yizdamin la zivu gacher hagun kazeh? Because otherwise it's going to be hard for her to find a shidduch. Meaning it's hard enough for her to be able to find somebody. You're going to now tell me she can't marry him because she'll end up living in the area and it's hard for him to move. It's a lot harder for him to find a shidduch than for him to move out of the yard. That's not right to do that to her. So there, he says, the tam ze adif mitam de tatula de gavra kashami de itisa. He says, that's a stronger reason. Being able to get married is a much stronger reason than you don't like moving. So so he says, on that basis, maybe she should in fact be able to marry the guy instead. But then he goes on and he says, ach, labal hasheni yachol limchosh lo yisa osa. It's true you can't protest her marrying the local. However, you are able to protest the new guy marrying her. You could protest the second husband. Because you, by marrying her, are forcing me to move. He uses our language. He says, that's giri delay. You are now forcing me out of my property because I have to move since you married her. That's the argument. So I bring it here because it obviously resonates with that. You're telling me that preventing me from living there for halachic reasons counts as harming my property. So maybe that does provide a basis for saying where the neighbor's actions make my living there halachically untenable, then that is giri delay. Now, that's not necessarily the same as the case of the person who was sunbathing. Maybe there are other ways that you can handle the case. I'm not saying you could extrapolate from one to one. I'm only saying that halachic issues may well affect the issue of neighbor relations and hilchos shchenim. That's my point. Clear? Good? Okay. That was the easy part of shir. Now for the rest. So those who are here in Beis Medrash this week spent a lot of time breaking our heads trying to understand the Gemara at the top of Yud Zayin Amud Beis. I'm not so sure that I'm going to make anything more clear, but I'm going to try. If only because after all those hours we should get something. We should spend some time trying to. Special credit to Daniel for all of his work, making sure that we actually understood it and weren't just pretending we understood it. So I sent out yesterday, after I sent out the Ma'ar Makomos, I sent out an additional PDF that I had found online from the journal Water, History of Water Cisterns, Legacies, and Lessons. Unfortunately, I did not put the link on the source sheet, but I sent out the link to it in the email, and you could find it there. If for some reason you don't have it, just Google History of Water Cisterns, Legacies, and Lessons, and you will find it. This... The paper has pictures and descriptions of cisterns going back to ancient times. They have a cistern from the city of Ai. They have cisterns from Crete, from Greece, from the Roman era. And what looks like from the period of the Gemara is that their cisterns were not what I thought. When I started reading the Gemara, I understood, and I think others here also, not everybody necessarily, but certain others, thought, you take out your shovel, you dig a hole, and then there's a space around that that's called the wall of your cistern, the wall of the bore. Right? You didn't do anything to it. But that's not the way it worked. Rather, the way it worked was, they dug these holes in rock, and they lined them with stones. So they actually created a stone wall within the cistern, and then they would seal it, the paper says, with clay. We know that's sud besid, right? Clay, lime, whatever that is, to prevent leakage. But that's what they were doing. So we're going to be talking about a bore. We're going to deal with the bore as the pit within the cistern, and then the kosel bore will end up being that stone layer that's surrounding it. You may be able to see some pictures on the whiteboard, the remaining from it. I don't know what we still have there and what we erased. My distance vision isn't great anymore. But nonetheless, the following two givens are important, and I put them on the source sheet, hoping that that would be helpful. Number one, when two pits are close to each other, each pit needs its own protective space, right? We're going to define that as three tefach for each pit, but you need protective space. Number one. Number two, our Mishnah is going to tell us that we have to distance a new pit, 3 tefach, from an existing pit that somebody else dug. I don't know exactly what that means yet, 3 tefach from which part of the pit, but that's what our Mishnah says. Those are our givens. And we have the following questions, which again I put on the sheet. Number one, there's no pit on the other side of the property line. Am I allowed to dig my pit right up to the line? And then just say, I'm going to put my stones, my little wall there, put it on the neighbor's property. He's not digging pits anyway. Could I actually pull that off? That's one question. It seems logical that you can't, but that's our discussion, number one. Number two, if pit number one goes up to the property line, then do I, on the other side, have to allow space for the protection of pit number one? Do I have to say, I'm not going to dig, lest I harm the neighbor? And then question number three, is 3 tefach, when we talk about distancing yourself, 3 tefach, is that the combined protective space needed for both, meaning each pit needs 1.5 tefach? Or is it 3 tefach for each pit? Those are the three questions which our Gemara is trying to solve. So, so you know what I actually did? Oh no. Huh. That's a first for me. Okay. I didn't actually bring the Gemara on the sheet. No one pointed that out. Nothing. All right. Well, hopefully you all have your Gemaras. On the Zoom, I'll be able to share screen with it. That's the first time that's happened for me. And I worked so hard on it. All right. Nunu. I'm going to share screen with it so that those who are online will be able to get it that way. Everybody else can pull out their Gemara. Okay, anybody wants a Baba Basra? Okay, one for Tommy, one for AZ. Thank you. Okay. So while the Mishnah is on Yizayin Amud Aleph and the Gemara is on Yizayin Amud Beis. Yeah, that's really interesting that I did that. All right. Okay. So first looking at the table of options, and then we'll get into the Gemara itself. I listed in each row one of my three questions. So the first option is to say that the case that we're going to discuss in the Mishnah when we say don't dig near somebody else's pit is where pit number one is already dug to the line, to the property line, and I'm supposed to distance 3 tefach in order to protect not his pit, but my pit. In other words, I don't owe him anything. You made the mistake of digging your cistern right on the property line. I don't owe you anything. I'll distance 3 tefach. I may even make use of any stones that you put in as your wall. And then I'll dig my hole on the other side. I don't owe you anything. And if you take that view, then what you're saying is, number one, people are allowed to dig to the line. Pit number one, what they did was legal when they dug up to the property line. Number two, you're saying that I don't have any obligation to protect pit number one when I dig pit number two. And number three, the 3 tefach is just the shear to protect one pit. And that's all I have to do, because I don't owe you anything. The guy on the other side chose to dig to the property line. That's his problem. He doesn't own the 3 tefach of my property. That's a simple, straightforward read. Option B is to say that what we're describing in our Mishnah is where pit number one is to the property line, and I'm protecting both pits by leaving 3 tefach. Because really, each pit just needs 1.5 tefach. So the answer is he was allowed to dig to the property line. And the answer is I do have to protect him. And the way I protect him is with 3 tefach that protects both pits. If I didn't have to protect him, I could do 1.5 tefach and just be done with it. You follow? There's a hole in all of this, so to speak, no pun intended, but I'm going to skip it for now. The option C is to say, we're talking about where pit one was indeed dug up to the property line. Really, you need 6 tefach in order to protect both pits. 3 tefach for his, 3 tefach for mine. He was allowed to dig up to the property line. However, he was allowed to dig up to the property line. No, but then I'm not protecting him. I think an option C. Oh, no, right, that's right, I'm sorry. I'm protecting both pits with a total of 6 tefach, because I'm distancing 3 tefach from his 3 tefach wall. Thank you. Correct. So, therefore, the 3 tefach is just what's needed for one pit. That's correct. And then option D is altogether different. Pit 1 was dug well into his property. He's got 3 tefach between his pit and the property line, in which case I am distancing myself 3 tefach from the property line, 6 tefach from his pit, and therefore our case doesn't teach me anything about whether you're allowed to dig to the property line or not. We didn't give that case. Maybe the answer is no, maybe the answer is yes. You can't prove it. If pit 1 is to the property line, do I have to protect it when I dig pit number 2? Don't know. And 3 tefach is just what one pit needs. That would be the other, that would be the way to read option D. Okay, I hope that was somewhat helpful, that introduction with it, but we'll see as we go through the Gemara. Yes, Idan.
According to option D, and let's say in Magna, let's say like one Chazanesh, 30 centimeters for protecting 2 pits, it sounds not logical.
What do you mean?
According to what you said, the term is,
yeah,
regarding about 30 centimeters, let's say almost, it's not, it won't, like,
it doesn't sound like it's enough.
It's not at all, not for 2.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand Metzias-wise, especially because when you look at the pictures, the stones really do look wider than this. Right. No, I mean, six tefach is an amma. Yes. No, I understand the question. Yeah, I don't have an answer for you. I think we have to go out and dig some pits. Maybe what we should do is when they remove the tent, we can use the holes from those poles and see.
It's really small measure.
We'll tell them it's a hands-on Gemara project for the grade 12s. That's what we'll do. Okay, I don't know. It's a good question. I don't have an answer. So, all right. Go to the Mishnah first on Yezayin Amad Aleph, just because seeing this without seeing the Mishnah would be a little weird. The Mishnah begins. Lo yachbor adam bor samuch lebor shachavero. No digging a pit close to somebody else's pit. And again, cases A through C, that pit on the other side is right up to the property line. Case D, it's 3 tevach within his rishus. We don't know which one it is. V'lo shiach, v'lo ma'ara, v'lo amas hamayim, v'lo nevechas kosim. We talk about other kinds of pits, which we're not going to discuss right now. Elem kein hirchik mikos al-chabero shlosh shetfachim v'sad besid. Unless you distance yourself 3 tevach from his kotel, and you line it with lime, or you line it with lime, ayin sham the shiurim from El Osman. So that's the line in the Mishnah. And as of now, I don't have an answer to any of our questions. I don't know if his pit is up to the property line. I don't know if the 3 tefach is a combined protective space or just protecting mine. I don't know anything right now. So I turn to Yitzayin Amud Beis. Yitzayin Amud Beis gives us the Gemara's discussion. So it begins by asking, and I'm going to read the Gemara straight first. Just read the Gemara, translate the words without, hopefully without bias, and then we're going to go back through it and read it Rashi's Shita and the Ran's Shita. I'm going to skip Tosas' Shita in the interests of time, but I'm going to go with Rashi and the Ran. So the way to read it straight. Pasach babor, umisayim bekotel. We are offended, it seems, because you started out by saying, don't dig your bor close to somebody else's bor. However, then we went on to say, as you can go back to the Mishnah to see online, here I'm doing it here, unless you distance from his kotel. So we are offended that you started with bor and that you ended with kotel. Why does that offend us? We'll have to figure it out. But what does this mean? Why did you do that? Amar Abaye, Abaye says, the Tamar of Yehuda, Mikosel Boro Shaninu. When we said kotel, we didn't mean kotel wall. We meant the wall around his pit, which, as we'll see in Rashi, and I think it's Muskam, means in the ground, the wall around his pit. And that seems to answer our questions now. Pit number 1 is able to be up to the property line, and I still have to distance myself further. That's what it seems like we're saying. And 3 tefach, it sounds like, is the space that is needed to protect at least one pit. So it would appear. To which the Gemara then asks, so why didn't you just say, distance yourself from his boar 3 tafach? Why did you say, distance from the kotel 3 tafach? To teach that the wall of the pit that you are, that you have around the pit is 3 tefach. Nafkamina lamekach umemkar. Practical application is, in the event that somebody is buying or selling a property, the wall around the pit has to be a 3 tefach wall. Kidisanya, like the Brisa says, Omer lechaveru bor v'kosla ani mochelach. If you say to somebody you're selling the cistern and the wall around it, tzarech shei kosla shlosha tefachim. It has to be 3 tefach wide. There's a lot to discuss about this, but that's the straight read of the Gemara. Itmar, we learned, haba lismoch betzad ha-meitzar. When pit number one is dug, if he wants to go up to the meitzar, up to the property line, Abaye Omer somech. Abaye says, sure, go ahead. Rabbi says, no, you can't do that. You need to have a protective space between your pit and the property line. Now, I am on version number one. There are two versions of the debate, Abaye and Rava, that we're about to read. And version one is the Machmir version. Version two is the Mekil version, the lenient version. I was going to put this in a table on the sheet. Again, I'm sorry about that, but I didn't end up doing that. But the first version of this is the following. Besada ha'asuya leboros. If the field on the other side is asuya leborot. How did you understand asuya leborot when you read it? What did that mean? Meant for having a pit?
Yeah.
Pitable. It could have a pit. So almost everybody on this, and I brought it to you in Rashi and Rabbeinu Gershom in Tes and Yud, seem to indicate that it means the other side really needs a pit. Not just it's pitable, but it has to have one. I find another word for that. The Rashi says, Asuya leboros, kigon beis hashlachin, like a field that needs irrigation, call back to Shemitah from last year, it needs constant irrigation, so you're going to need a cistern for a supply of water. And Rabbeinu Gershom says it even stronger, that's why I brought him in Source Yud, it needs to have a bore. That's asuya leboros. It means you know the field on the other side is getting a pit. And if you dig your pit in such a way that he's now going to have a problem digging a pit in his space, you're harming him. He needs a pit. I did note for you in Yud Aleph, the one voice I found who said something different for Sada Asuya Leboros is in the Chavrusa that they bring on Bar Ilan, and I don't know where he got it from. He says, Sada Asuya Leboros, Shaderech Ulach Bor Baporos. People normally do. I don't know where he invented that. Everybody else seems Rashi Rabbeinu Gershom. But that's true in general. When you're using Chavrusa, just know it isn't always correct. Your Chavrusa here is always correct. Your Chavrusa on the Bar Ilan is not always correct. Yeah, so I think, but it's a tzorech. It's not a. You're saying that he means when he says derech, means that maybe. But that's the in that case, if the field on the other side is asuya leboros, it needs pits. Then divrei akol, Abaye and Rava agree, eino somech. So you're not allowed to go up to the property line. This guy over here there needs to dig a pit, and now you're going to force him to be distant. Ki pligi besada she'en asuya leboros. The debate is where the field on the other side doesn't have to have a pit. Abaye yomar somech. So Abaye says you can go up to the property line, she'en asuya leboros, because the field on the other side isn't made for boros anyway. Rava amar eino somech, the amar lay, ki hechi diat imlechas v'chafart, ananami manlachna v'chafarna. Rava says, no, you can't do that. Why? Because the guy on the other side is going to say, you decided to dig a pit, I might decide to dig a pit. The fact that it doesn't need one doesn't mean that I can't dig one. You're limiting my use of my property. So Rava says, no way, this is the more machmir version. The second version, the more mekel version, is the one that we tend to paskin la halacha. So the second version of it goes, Ika de Amri, alternatively, Besada she'en asuya leboros debriar kol somech. If the field on the other side is not in need of a pit, then everybody agrees that you can be somech. You can go right up to the line. Ki pligi, the only debate is besada asuya labaros. Well, you know the other guy is going to want to dig a pit. Abaye amar somech. Abaye says, no, you can still go up to the boundary. Even according to the view that you generally have to distance yourself, like distance your tree from his pit, that's because when you plant the tree, the cistern's already there. So you are more directly harming the guy. But right now I'm digging, there's no cistern on the other side. Yeah, eventually he's going to dig a cistern. No. Right now I'm not doing anything. This is not even grama. That's Abaye. But Rava Amareno Somech. And Rava says, no, that's not true. You're not allowed to be Somech if you know the field on the other side is going to want a pit. Even Rabbi Yossi, who we already know, is Mekil when it comes to worrying about what's going on the other side. I dig my pit here, you plant your tree there, we're fine. Hani mili hasam, debi'ina dekanata, lasnu l'sharashav, demazgi l'labur. Sure, because when you're dealing with a tree, at the time you plant it, it doesn't have the roots that are extending yet. It's more remote. Aval hacha, but here, Amar Lei, he responds, as we discussed in Shir and Elozman, komara v'mara de kamachias kamarfis lalaroi. Every shovelful, every time you dig, right, you are shaking the ground, you're weakening my land, whatever Rabbi Yehuda discussed in Shir and Elozman, but you are harming me directly when you dig. So that's a different story. So Abaye and Rava agree. If the field on the other side is not made for pits, doesn't need pits, then you can go to the line. Otherwise, machlokes. And we'll talk about psak later, but no big surprise. Generally speaking, we're going to follow Rava in the second version of it, and therefore say you're not allowed to go to the line if the field on the other side is a suya labaras. Tommy.
The Gemara doesn't entertain the possibility they both need pits?
So it does seem to entertain the possibility that they both need pits, but why would that change things?
The reason I say that
the Gemara does is because of the language that was used when he said, just like you decided to dig, so too I decided to dig. So it's possible that you're dealing with a situation in which they both are even. The bottom line is still, one of them came to dig before the other one. If they both come to dig simultaneously, we're going to discuss in the Rishonim. That we will see. So, yes. So I believe we follow Rashi, Rabbeinu Gershom, and so on, that it's a field that actually he's going to need to. He might decide not to because he doesn't know what he's doing. But if he wants to succeed with this field, he's going to have a pit.
So if that's the case, is there like a time limit where we put saying, okay, how long is the person have to wait to be able to dig his pit? It's like the person has to wait after 5 years, and 10 years. There's certain property rights that are currently claimed by, you know, disputed. Who gets to own it? And people haven't been able to construct it in their own property because of what comes 20 years later.
Right, it's an interesting question. I haven't seen anything on it. It's an interesting question. Anybody else see anything on that? What if the other guy's had the field for 30 years and he hasn't dug anything? It's an interesting question. I don't know. So what we need to know going in is the following. We're going to see Rashi, we're going to see the Rani. The fundamental question that we want to start with is, what is bothering the Gemara about the fact that you started with the word bor and then you went to the word kotel? Why do you care? That's the fundamental question. But what we're going to see is, Rashi believes that our Mishnah just wants to teach us option D. That's what it wants to teach us. That where pit number one was 3 tefach from the property line, pit number two also needs to go 3 tefach from the property line. It isn't discussing the case in which pit number one is up to the line. That's Rashi's read. The Ran believes that our Mishnah wants to teach us option A and option D. It wants to teach us that if pit number one is up to the property line, pit number two has to be 3 tefach away, and that if pit number one is 3 tefach from the property line, pit number two also has to be 3 tefach away, and Abaye and Rava will each explain the Mishnah to suit them in a way that suits their view. Abaye and Rava can each read their view into the Mishnah. But according to the Ran, you're distancing 3 tefach whether the other guy is up to the line or not up to the line. Doesn't make a difference. So, approach number one is Rashi. And Rashi begins by telling us the issue here is textual inconsistency. And our Mishnah is where pit number one is, as I said, 3 tefach within. Our question is, why did you start with bor and end with Kotel, because the word Kotel creates confusion. Flip the page, please, to Source Yud Beis. I brought you Rashi. Pasach Babor. You started with Bor. Samuch Laboro Shachavera, right? Don't dig near the next guy's pit. Vahadar Siyim, and then you ended Elam Kein Hirchak Mikotel, unless you distance from the wall. Havale Lemisni, Elam Kein Hirchak Miboro. You should have said, unless you distance yourself from his pit. Dilu mi koslo, by saying kotel, keywords, kotel habanui al gabe karkahu. It's a wall that is over the ground. It's not talking about the wall in the ground around the pit. It's talking about a guy's got a wall. So you started out by saying, don't dig a pit next to this guy's pit. Right? Distance yourself from this guy's wall. That's entirely inconsistent. It's like you're talking about two different things. That's what's bothering Rashi at the outset. You gave me confusing language. I don't understand. You seem to be talking about two different cases in the Mishnah. To which, along comes Abaye / Rabbi Yehuda, and he says, I'll solve your problem. When we said Bora, when we said Koslo, we meant Kosel Bora. We didn't mean a random wall on the guy's property. We meant the wall around the pit. That's what we were talking about, this in-ground wall. So we have solved the confusion. The wall is the wall of the pit in the ground. It's that stone thing that we mentioned. Now, on a literal level, you could read this as case B, case C, or case D. You could read it as any of them. It's not A, I think, because we're not going to legislate a requirement to protect myself. You have to distance yourself three tefach to protect yourself. Like, it's up to you to protect yourself or not. But it could be case B, it could be case C, and it could be case D. Ramban insists, writing about Rashi, that it's not B or C. It's not case B where the pit number one was dug to the property line, and you're protecting both pits now with your three tefach. You only needed 1.5 for yours. And it's not case C, where pit one is to the line, and you actually have to distance yourself 6 tefach. Because it's not logical that you would be responsible to protect your neighbor where he dug up to the line. We'll see that in the Ramban in a little bit. So that doesn't make sense. So this has to be option D. Pit number one was dug 3 tefach from the property line, and you are distancing 3 tefach into your property line. That's Rashi's case, as explained by Ramban. So in the end, our Mishnah means pit one is 3 tefach within property number one. Rashi does not address what you would do if pit number one was in fact dug up to the property line. Ramban will address it. And Rashi doesn't explain why we use the word kotel either. Right? In Rashi's read, he never goes back and says, well, then why didn't you use the word bor? If what you meant was bor, you could have said bor. Why did you use the word kotel? The answer is, it meant kosel boro. To which the Gemara then asks, and I'm working with Rashi's addition, Tosos moves this line. But the Gemara then asks, velisni, but then why didn't you say, mi boro shel chavero? You didn't need the word wall at all. Had we just said 3 tefach from the boar, I would have known you meant 3 tefach from the wall of the boar, we are assuming. I would have known that automatically. So Rashi says, if you take a look at Rashi in Source Yud Beis, Va'ana Yadana, I would have known, Demi Kosel Ka'amar, that you're talking about distancing from the wall. De'ime Chalal Boro Ka'amar, because if you're talking about distancing yourself from the hollow part of his pit, you wouldn't be retreating within your property. Let me explain that better. He says the first bor has to be 3 tefach within the other guy's within pit number one's property, so that his 3 tefach from the hollow of his pit to the property line will only come up to the property line, and the second guy, right? If all you needed was 3 tefach, he wouldn't be marchik at all. He'd be fine. He's got his 3 tefach. So it must be that what you're doing is 3 tefach from the wall of the boar. That must be what's going on. That's the question. Again, let me say this a little bit sharper. You could have said mi boro shel chavero, and everybody would have understood it's from the end of the kotel. Because we know that the other guy is 3 tefach within his property. How does Rashi know that? I don't know. bothering Daniel no end. But Rashi says, I knew that there were three tefach already there, and therefore, I could have said, if all you want is three tefach from the hollow, I already have it. So it must mean three tefach from the end of his kosel. Rashi then concludes, if you only distance three tefach from his hole, and he's like Idan, and he says, I want a really wide wall, I want four tefach or five tefach, you're going to digging your bore within his wall. That's not cool. Yes. To Rashi, the wall being three tefach is a given. Now, Ramban quotes a question against Rashi and answers it. Ramban, which I brought you in source Yigimel, and I see we only have 5 minutes remaining. Ramban quotes a question against Rashi. The question is this. Why couldn't we have assumed that pit number one went up to the property line? Each pit only needs 1.5 tefach, right? This is option B in my table. And you do 3 tefach in order to cover both. Why can't that be? I'm taking care of both. And if they were digging simultaneously, then you would split it with the other guy. He does that 1.5, you do 1.5, and then you're fine. That's his answer, which Ramban writes. I brought it in source Yigimel. You can see it there. And so he says, and to continue that question, that's why we needed to say, distance yourself from the neighbor's wall, in order to show the neighbor distanced 3 tefach already, and you're adding 3 to reach a total of 6. And Ramban says it has to be that the neighbor distanced the maximum that's needed, the 3 tefach. Because if the neighbor only distanced himself 2 tefach, then your distance would have to be 4 tefach. The neighbor distanced himself 1 tefach, your distance would have to be 5 tefach. He says they don't give you variations. So Ramban says it's for sure that he distanced means he distanced 3. So the question they ask against Rashi is, why couldn't we have assumed that pit number 1 went up to the property line? And his answer is, because it's logical that if the other guy went up to the property line, you would not have to protect him at all. You would only have to distance enough to protect you. Option A, in other words. It's telling me you only have to do 3. So by saying that you distance 3, that teaches me that the total is 6. I didn't need this Mishnah to teach me option A. I know option A. It's logical that I don't have to worry about the other guy. The only thing I need this Mishnah to teach me is option D. So Rashi, again, is saying, the goal here is to teach me option D. Pit number 1 was 3 tefach within property number 1. And now I am coming along and digging, and I need to go 3 tefach within my property. That's Rashi's view. So we asked the question again. The question that we asked was, the Velisni question that we asked was, if you said mi boro, I already would have known it's mi koslo. And the answer is, yeah, that's true. But I needed it for mekach u'memkar. It teaches me mekach u'memkar. It teaches me commerce. Now, challenge to this approach. It seems we're learning from our Mishnah's requirement that there is a wall space of 3. Right? That's what you're telling me. Why isn't that also a lesson for Harchaka? Why is that only a lesson for mekach u'memkar? Why isn't this exactly how I know how far to distance myself from the other guy's property? This is a really important law. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in the beginning of Shechinim. It would be in Bava Basra in the Mekach u'Memkar section. Hamocher Sfina, Hamocher Bayis, Hamocher Bor, whatever, right? This is included, this isn't included. That's where this belongs. It's a Shechinim law, according to the way Rashi is reading it. What do you mean, Mekach u'Memkar? So the Ran is going to give us an entirely different perspective, not entirely different, a somewhat different perspective. He says that's not what's going on at all. I sent out an article, I don't know if anybody looked at it, by someone who actually took apart the Ran bit by bit, trying to explain it. I found it somewhat helpful, somewhat confusing. Your mileage may vary. But what we're going to do in the beginning of next week's Shiur, God willing, will be to tackle the Ran, and to see Psak on this, and then Rav Jared will give the rest of Shiur. I'm sort of tempted to just record the rest after and send out the link, because starting Shiur again, we'll have to review enough to get us to this point, but I think we can manage it. What do you think? If I record it and I upload it or whatever, will people listen to it? That's the big question. It's often harder to get to do that. When you upload it, it's like, oh, I can get that tomorrow. All right, so maybe we'll do it in the beginning of Shiur next week. I think so. But I'm also believing that they're going to redo the source sheet with the Gemara on it and send that out so that people will have that. I apologize for missing that. But again, what we've got so far is a Mishnah that is telling me to distance myself from the neighbor. And what Rashi is saying, what it means is that if the neighbor distanced three tefach within their line, you distance three tefach within your line as well. That's the chiddush that the Mishnah wants to teach me. Clear? The big hole in all of this, and what bothers me about this that I referenced in the beginning, is that if the neighbor dug up to the line and you only dig three tefach, don't you need six tefach for your protection also? In other words, normally there's three tefach on his side and three tefach on your side, right? If there's only three tefach now instead of six, why isn't that also dangerous for you? Oh, I didn't think so. I don't know. I think it's a Matthias question. I'm not understanding something here, but it's worth thinking about. Thank you very much. Have a good Shabbos.